Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the Fighting on Film podcast, the podcast all about classic and obscure war movies, from the Normandy landings to the days of chivalry and swords. If it's been captured on film, we're going to try and cover it. I'm Robbie of RM Military History.
I'm Matthew Moss of Historical Firearms and the Armourer's Bench. Hello there, sorry to interrupt. I wanted to let you know that you can now join our supporting cast over on Patreon. As thanks for your support, you'll be able to help us pick films, submit questions for guests, have first pick on brand new and exclusive merch, and much more. Thank you for your support. Now back to the show. Hello and welcome back to Fighting on Film. This week we are taking a look at one of Netflix's more recent war films, Blood and Gold, a film that comes out of Germany and has had a bit of an interesting promo to it, and with a relatively straight trailer and then followed by a somewhat sort of spaghetti western Euro war movie
kind of movie thing. Yeah. Which I loved. That was really great.
It was like, very well edited.
One of the most interesting things Netflix done promoting a movie for a while for me, or at least, you know, relevant to the show. Really like that. I'm just going to give a warning to listeners this week. My dog's sleeping in the room next to me. And when he is, I always like to say, hear any funny noises? It's him snoring. He's the loudest dog in the world, even when he's asleep. Anyway, but no, I love that trailer. It was like, what if Netflix was around in the 70s and they were like some sort of like low budget, like a Hammer type studio? I really liked it. But then we might come back to that later because that's maybe where my issues with the movie started. It will sort of bleed in later. So maybe we should just throw in the cast quickly and then production and get into it. So this movie is led by Robert Masser, and the cast is predominantly made up of German actors. So unless I tell you different, rose to prominence after appearing in Mission Impossible Rogue Nation in 2015. In 2019, he played the German pilot in 1917. Such a confusing movie to talk about because of the years. He also featured in the Uncharted film adaptation, and this year he will play Alexei, or it's already out, I'm not sure. I don't think it got released in this country yet, I don't know. In the film The Machine, you know that, Bert Kreischer? The bearded comedian, he has like a podcast with another comedian.
Right.
And he did this stand-up routine, which was like he was the machine, and it was this whole thing of being in Russia or something, and they turned it into a movie. But he plays himself, even though he was young at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I know what you
mean.
Yeah,
if you've been on TikTok,
I've heard something
or Facebook,
about this, but I haven't listened to the podcast, so I
don't
know.
It always comes up, this routine.
I've heard something similar to that. Yeah.
Yeah, not my kind of thing, but you know, it looked interesting. But yeah, he's in that. And the guy has cheekbones you could cut diamonds on. I was like mesmerized by these cheekbones. Like we all wish we looked as chiseled as Massa. They even mention it at the start of the movie. The SS officer goes, oh, you have like, you know, cheekbones that some famous German would be proud of, you look Aryan type spiel. We're talking about that Obersturmführer. He's played by Alex Scheer. He's born in East Germany in 1976, and he's considered one of the most daring German actors of his generation, and he's picked up no less than 8 German film awards, very prolific in his home country. Lots of German TV film credits. His credits notable include Carlos the Jackal, which was an Emmy award-winning series from 2010. 2017's Pirates of the Caribbean, Salazar's Revenge. And he played Dieter Degowski in 57 Hours, which was a miniseries depicting the 1988 Gladbeck hostage crisis. Now, if you know anything about that, there's a fantastic verbatim documentary, like a traditional documentary on Netflix at the moment, which is brilliant. It's a whole thing about the media get over-involved in the hostage crisis. They're following these people around. At one point, they're in a town and all the media are swarming this car, but the car's with 2 guys in and they've got guns to hostages. It was a huge thing in the 80s, late 80s in Germany. He plays one of the hostage takers. We play the guy very well from seeing him as menacing in this. You know, I don't think we've had such a caricature of an SS villain since the 70s. It was such a cool, overplayed yet understated performance. I really like watching him work. Then we have Simon Rupp. He plays Pauli. Pauli, as you say in German. Blood and Gold is his first credit, but he did appear in the German series Champions. We have Jochen Nickel as the pastor. Fans of the show will recognise him from Schindler's List. He played Rollo in Stalingrad in 1993. Like, I knew his face. He's got a big beard in this. And I was like, I know that face. And then me and Matt looked it up beforehand, because searching some of these actors down through Wikipedia, through IMDb, it's a bit of a nightmare this week. We've had a bit of it seems like this movie, as Netflix does, I don't know how Matt feels about this, but films come out on Netflix, they have their 2 days in the sun, and then they're gone. They sort of fall back into the ether.
Yeah, there's a little bit of buzz for a while, and then, not as much, that's for sure, yeah.
And he was also in the Turncoat series, which is a German miniseries set in 1944, I think. Then we have Mary Hack as Elsa. She's Pauli's sister. She's born in West Germany. She appeared in Outlander in 2018. She was in Soko Stuttgart, which is like a German, I think, police procedural detective show. I think Jochen Nickel even appeared in that at one point. And Blood and Gold seems to be her biggest credit that would probably be known to Westerners. She's very good in this. Everyone's very good in this. The cast is really strong. Yeah. Then we have Florian Schmidtke as Dorfler. He's the sergeant, sort of the underling to Obersturmführer Starnfeld. He's got, many German film and TV credits. Again, things that listeners might know him from is he was Werner in War Sailor, which came out recently on Netflix. And he also played Talio, in the German Netflix series Barbarians in 10 episodes from 2020-2022. It's like a historical action drama.
Oh, like Vikings.
Yeah, a bit like, it seemed a bit like Vikings. I'm not really fantasy person, or I'm not really fantasy, you know what I mean. I know we say chivalry and swords at the start of the show, but I've got to admit,
I'm not
the biggest guy. I'm going to blow the pod wide open. Me and my wife are on
We have neglected it, and we know
we have. And there is literally a list of movies at FOF HQ that we have pigeonholed as chivalry and swords movies, and we really should just do a month of them and see if the pod weathers that storm. If you want that,
just do one a month for a bit.
If you want that, ladies and gentlemen, please let us know on our socials, because we will accommodate you if you want chivalry and swords.
We frequently get messages about it.
We do. Give them what they want, Matt. Give them what they want. And then we have Roy McCreary, and he plays the US sergeant, who's only in it for a few lines, but he's in it nevertheless. And he's an English actor. He appeared in The Liberator in 2020. He also played a redcoat in The Patriot. And he also played Captain McAllister in the D-Day reboot series in 2018. They're the major players, really. It's a strong cast, nevertheless. I really enjoyed the cast. We'll find out more, I think, later.
Yeah. Let's just round out production side of things. So it was directed by Peter Thorwarth. I'm probably butchering that pronunciation of a fine German name.
Do your best, Matt.
He has had a interesting career directing lots of German music videos and films. In 2021, he directed a successful horror film for Netflix called Blood Red Sky, which is kind of like a virus on a plane.
Yeah, it looked quite interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, he apparently been wanting to make that for a number of years and managed to get it with Netflix. The film was written by Peter and Stefan Barth, who's a novelist and a very experienced screenwriter with lots of German TV and film credits. Cinematography was handled by Mark Achenbach, and the music was co-created by Jessica De Rouge and Hendrik Nolly, a pair of, I believe, Dutch composers. Alongside their score, there's also inclusions of period popular music to break up some of the more tense, serious moments.
I think the soundtrack is one of the strongest parts of this movie. I really like it.
Okay.
It's just a shame. I don't know if I'm going to give up all my final thoughts, but I think it's a shame that the soundtrack isn't then used to lean into more of that, those beats that they grab in.
I know what you mean. It was filmed in the Czech Republic near Prague, and the Czech town of Vizluni, I believe it's pronounced, served as the backdrop of Sonnenberg for the film. I don't believe it's actually, I think it is actually named as Sonnenberg in the film, but it's essentially it's that provided the backdrop of the village.
It's like a hot, it's like a, you know, you've just called it somewhere, you know, like that when they shoot Chicago and it's New York.
Perhaps, yeah.
Sort of thing.
The armorer was Marek Bocek, and he has worked on a whole raft of really interesting films. Flame and Citron in 2008, a remake of Die Brücke in 2008 as well.
Yes.
The Czech film Tobruk, which is an interesting one we must cover at some point. Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol.
Nice link there to NASA.
1864, the Danish production, in 2014. Line of Separation, 2015 to 18, which was a TV series set at the end of the war. Child 44, which was Gary Oldman and
that
Tom
flopped a bit, didn't it?
Harvey, I remember. Picture, which is just a weird premise to get like a big, you know, a punchy box office on it. Yeah. Anthropoid in 2016, Das Boot in 2018, Jojo Rabbit in 2019.
Wow, what a list.
So the armorer on the film has worked on lots of really good productions, essentially. I couldn't find a historical advisor for the film, but there is a thank you credit at the end to Dr. Christian Hartmann, who's a German historian. So perhaps he may have...
Yeah, I mean, everything I saw looked, you know, right. Yeah, no, well, I couldn't pick it, really, you know.
We'll talk a little bit about that in a moment in the Alley Tally, but... I did read that they said during interviews that they wanted to make a Western set during the Second World War, which I think we'll come back to as a point later on. It works in some ways, and in some others it doesn't. Also saw on one of the articles about the film that it was originally going to be called Once Upon a Time in Germany, but this would have clashed with the 2017 movie. So they decided to go with another title.
Yeah, this is a better title.
Yeah, it's a little bit more ambiguous, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
And that, you know what you're getting. I think that brings us to this week's One Word Reviews. And we had a couple. Liam Patrick said, "Gut." SOE Spirit of Resistance said, "Meh."
Yeah.
AD Bond said tense. Brian Dark Secret Place on Twitter said meh as well. Mr. C 1966 said need to watch quickly, all one word. Azzy said Kubelwagen. We had once a modeler, another meh. Albert Yom said deadly. JD said brutal, and Stephen O'Neill said okay. So kind of mixed reviews on that one, I think.
Yeah, and then we had Lance Nielsen said the dog's bollocks, which was...
Yeah, but that was three words, so...
I mean, yeah. No. I mean,
sorry, Lance.
Bollocks. No, it's fine. Some polarizing thoughts there. I kind of fall into one of those camps. I mean, you might have worked out already, dear listener, but no, I think it's fair. Like, because this is the thing about this film, jump off on a quick tangent. It comes out the day that Sisu comes out.
Off tangent, never.
I know, right? It comes out the day that Sisu comes out, and it kind of felt like this was Netflix's go. I know we know from the few weeks ago, but if you're a new listener, you might not. Sisu originally was going to be a Netflix film. It was going to be, you know, optioned by them and released. So we always wondered, and you might not ever get to the bottom of it, you know, unless it comes out some months down the line. But this kind of feels like this was bought or optioned by Netflix for the streaming service to be their sort of Sisu replacement. And maybe that period type trailer was to lamp onto the Sisu reaction to that trailer, because everything you get in that trailer, you get and more. Whereas this one, it feels like everything you get in the trailer, you pretty much see, and that's probably about it in terms of action.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that a studio had put out a rival picture of a similar
vein. Very true. Yeah, exactly. This isn't even in like Mockbuster territory either. You're not trying to like cash in. This is a well-made film, you know, for its budget.
Absolutely.
And yeah. Everything else. The actual production itself isn't the thing I take umbrage with this week, or not umbrage even, just I don't really get. But yeah, it's interesting that this comes out at the same time, and I know that I think the hype for Sisu might have been bigger, because Sisu's getting a theatrical release over here, at least. This is straight to Netflix. It's streaming versus theatrical. Is it still a thing we're going to have to work through as a viewing public, consumers of content? We're going to have to... This is a weird medium that we're in right now. One is still perceived as probably being a lot more prestigious than the other. I think
Sisu, director DVD sort of stigma with Netflix and streamers still, isn't
so.
It, to a degree. Although, God knows, some good stuff has come out of it. But
yeah, exactly. It's weird. You get something like All Quiet on the Western Front, which is like an Oscar contender.
Yeah, winner.
And then, winner, sorry. And then you get this. And where does this sit? Because Netflix isn't... It's not a creative thing. It's not like, you know, the Criterion Collection. It's
Well, God knows studios are putting out some crap anyway into theatres. I mean, look at that new Jennifer Lawrence film.
Yeah, exactly. There's some weird things.
Which is, again, that's a Sony picture, which we saw the trailer for that with the...
That was an experience, wasn't it? in a room full of...
You know, if anyone from Sony is listening to that, like, don't take that to heart. Yeah.
Fighting on Film talks non-genre movies for once.
Right?
On
talk
show.
About tangents.
Amazing.
Jumping off the back of that, let's talk about some Ali Kit.
It's time for Ali Tally on Fighting on Film.
It's nice to see a German officer popping pills.
Yeah, the Pevsin, yeah.
Rarely see that. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, they made a point of panning over the tube too, so you can see the name. And yeah,
that's cool.
I mean, I really like the characterization of the colonel.
Really do.
He plays it fabulously. It's archetypal evil Nazi SS officer, but it's so sinister and unhinged to the point of perfection, I think.
Mm.
And that tin face prosthetic really adds to it, because the practical effects, or the impractical effects. Yeah.
And he gets the ring out of the eye. Gosh, that was... And then, that was brutally, you know, done. And they don't even tell you how he lost his face, really, do they? So that was a nice little thing. They go, oh, how did he lose it? Did he get, like, dragged through a thing?
There's lots of nice nuances with all of the characters. That you can, you know, you've got the priest or the pastor that is, you know, essentially a lapsed Catholic going out with, or having as a, you know, partner, the huntress, who pops up later in the film. The nuance of Marie Hank Hack's character, Elsa, where she has a fiancé that's gone off to war, or husband that's gone off to war, and she's looking after her brother.
There's a hell of a lot going on.
There's lots that you that is there for you to go, wow, okay.
They build up the little town really well.
They do, yeah. Because you've got the Gauleiter, you've got the... And then we've got, like, his wife who's disgruntled because he's having an affair with, like, the local business lady. It's very interesting. Like, there's a lot of nuance within the characterization of the characters. Yeah. But at the same time, when people were asking me what I thought of it initially, because I watched it a couple of weeks ago on Twitter, I was describing it as like Zissou, but with a little bit more depth.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, I think it has Zissou elements, but I don't think it's in the same bracket.
No, it isn't, and we'll talk about more.
Zissou never slowed down. This movie does. In terms of Ali stuff, there's a Sherman. Wasn't expecting to see. That was cool.
Right at the end.
Right at the end. Yeah, MP40s galore. I've never seen so many MP40s being fired, and they have the right tack, tack, tack. Like slow kind of rate of fire,
and they reload them.
Yeah, that was cool. And they have a nice thing where, you know, like in Last of the Mohicans, where you've got a guy giving a guy fowling pieces that are already loaded, so it's quicker. You've got a guy giving the German sergeant MP40. He doesn't have to reload. There's a nice section where you see like a sniper rifle being used, a scope,
98K. Yeah,
a Panzerfaust at the end. That's pretty cool.
Panzerfaust was cool. P-38 pistols throughout. MG-42s in the opening and in other bits. There's a nice section where they're in the rafters of the church, and there's some M-39 German egg grenades being rolled around.
That's nice.
The Panzerfaust was really cool. I'm not sure it would have collapsed an entire medieval spire, but it was that's a bit OP.
Matt spent months writing about the Piat. Like take it out what it can and can't take out. So he's like, you know, you looked at what a Panzerfaust can and can't take out for contrast. So every time I see a Panzerfaust used in the movie, I'm like, Matt's going to be all over that one. it was cool to see him though.
It was a nice inclusion, and the CGI for it wasn't too bad. They kind of showed that it wasn't the fastest flying projectile.
Because I might be talking out of my backside. But I don't think the Panzerfaust is in movies as much as we think it is.
No, that's
kind of like how we think the Piat isn't. Is it in as much as it really is? Like it's not. Yeah, you know, it pops up, but it's not as prevalent as you think it would be. Like there was how many Panzerfausts were knocking around at that top part of the war? There was so many of them. Lads had bundles of them running around. You know, the Volkssturm, handed them as there's like singular weapons because they just
wasn't, yeah, that's very true. Yeah,
and you know. Totally. Decent rifles, things, and knock him round. But it was nice to see it. Like, and she shot and she fired it. I thought it would be like, like a tease that it wouldn't get used or something. That was nice. You get a Kubelwagen being blown up. That was cool to see.
Yeah, yeah. I liked the strafing run of the US aircraft.
That was
cool. It didn't blow up the truck. They just animated it so the cannon fire wrecked the chassis.
It was nice. Matt appreciated that. I know you did.
I was like, that was good. That didn't blow up. Normally that would blow up in a film, but they tried to do something different.
Yeah, it was nice. I liked it. And it was nice, like not the whole like fake out in Saving Private Ryan where is it Miller? No, it's actually the tank buster Do you remember that whole thing? Like just to go off on another tangent this week, but do you remember that? Do you remember how boring and laborious that was to talk about with people before the internet proper?
How did he shoot that tank with a handgun?
Yeah. Well, at school, we'd be like, a bullet went up the turret.
Oh, yeah.
went up the barrel of
there's
the tiger.
There's probably a few, there's probably like at least a few, like 480, 240p YouTube videos where people talk about that.
It's got to be.
15 years ago.
You know, like the early days of YouTube.
Yeah.
Exactly. But now we have these beautiful widescreen shots, maybe on like an old telly. Maybe that it cropped it a little bit.
I watched it a lot on a little combi TV, and I always thought it was the plane that flew over.
Part of me wished it was Miller And then when you're old, you think, now it's obviously the tank buster getting a good hit on the back of that radiator or something, you know.
Like, who knows?
Anyway. But no, it was nice. Oh, Opel, we'll talk about vehicles and things. The Opel Blitz, that was a lovely little thing to see. And it was a genuine Opel Blitz, not a mocked-up Benny, not a post-war vehicle painted grey like in Zizou. It was an actual Opel Blitz. I was like, wow, very nice.
They did a great job getting some period kit, and I'm going to say it had decent mise-en-scène.
Like, I was just about to mention
that. It feels authentic, and it captures that late-war griminess. There's nuance within even the supporting cast uniforms. Helmet covers are different. There's a medic with a painted helmet there as well. Different, I think one's wearing like the Ellie Flecton type.
The blouse thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. It's not called Flecton, but it's one of the tones.
Is it oak? Oak pattern?
Yeah, something like that.
I'm probably way off. Someone's going to moan at me on
definitely
Twitter
not
that.
An expert on German camo of the late war period, that's for sure.
Camo Corner with Matthew Moss.
It's never going to be a feature, that's for sure.
No, we've tried before.
But I do like the little intricacies. The costumers have gone to some nice lengths to put different kit in different places on people, like different mess tins, respirator like tubes and bayonets in different spots. And
there's some nice civilian weapons as well, like the shotgun that also has things like that. It's really cool.
The big boar hunting rifles that the Huntress has. I can't remember whether she was actually given a name in the film, but she's...
I was annoyed there was no Volkssturm, though.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, the Gauleiter dude kind of like hints that he's the local area commander, but you don't see anyone.
It's not beyond the realm's possibility that local Volkssturm just might have just disintegrated way before the Americans got there.
They've been put on a truck and taken to that village that they see in the distance getting absolutely hammered.
Maybe. Yeah.
That's a really nice shot, actually. I like that. They're in like a roof of somewhere. Is it the church? I don't know. Mm. But they're overlooking and they can see in the distance. And there's a little conversation between two of the actors. And he says, my aunt lives there.
Yes. It did really feel like there was a war going on other than, you know, this little village was going to be eclipsed eventually. You know, it certainly felt
that better than Zizou did.
It did, yeah. Because Zizou felt like it was taking part in its own alternate universe right until the end when you saw some Finnish troops.
Yeah.
But then that movie is, you know, that movie's in its own league, really, in terms of what it did. But no, I think, you know, in terms of kit and equipment seen on screen, this is quite powerful. It's a strong contender from what we've had for many weeks, for a few weeks now. I think this one's up there. There was nothing that really stood out to me as being completely out of the blue. And I wasn't really expecting much anyway.
No.
I was pleasantly surprised. One thing that I did see, one of the American chaps was wearing M1951 suspenders, which are post-war Korean War. It might be M49. Well, they're Korean War ones anyway, so they've got a thicker webbing strap. That's really like anorak, you know.
I couldn't help it. Corner with Rob.
It really was.
Literally like a 3-second glimpse of some Americans at the end of the film, and Rob's there like, nah.
I was analysing that.
That one there, out of those dozen guys, that one right there is wearing the wrong webbing.
Literally was like that, yeah. But no, sometimes...
This is
where
we get another like... Another RC comment or review where it's like, they're just rivet counters. Like, we're not, honestly, I swear to God.
Dale, do I love that about us? So what could, you know, I'm going to hang my hat on that every week now.
At least we compartmentalize it into just one section of the show.
Anyway, I think we should probably move on to favorite scenes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So for me this week, my favourite scene has to be Paul in the church tower.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
It's a very nice payoff to a character that you know something bad is going to happen to.
I know, I was really sad when he got hurt.
Because he's introduced, he's kind, he's looking after animals. He helps Lanza's back, like kind of like.
Yeah.
There's a scene in the farmhouse where Elsa's brought Lanza, the I think he's called the private in the British credits, back to her farmhouse, and Paul kind of like cracks his back for him.
Yes.
And
they call him our little ox or something, don't they?
Yeah, something like that.
It just feels like he's been sheltered from the war there. I really like that. You know, the really strong, really strong characters.
Again,
gotta say.
Yeah. And I respect the representation, you know, of people with Down syndrome, and the mention of Nazi extermination, of disabled people, untermention, etc. And then Paul has his badass little sequence that you aren't quite expecting. He's obviously, you know, he's not as oblivious and helpless as he's set up to be.
Yeah.
And he goes out like a don.
He really does. He goes out like an absolute G. But he has motivation though, because they kill his cow.
They do. They kill his cow.
I was well upset
chickens,
at that.
They try and rape his sister.
Know why, so that really got
plenty
me.
Of.
I was like, not a cow. That's the cow.
The cow was going to die. Like, you knew that the cow was going to get shot. Paul was going to be sad about that, and then Paul was going to die at some point. That was always on the cards.
I was
as soon
really
as that
sad
character
that
was introduced, sadly.
Emotionally and like physically abused him. I was really sad about that. I was like, there's no need, chaps. There's literally no need. Like,
well, you know, Nazis.
Oh, yeah.
So,
you know, bad guy's good, a bad guy. But even
exactly.
then.
So he gets that great little sequence where they take him up into the church tower to make an example of him.
And that whole thing of, you know, again, sorry, we should have mentioned it in the Alitalia, more historical, but the whole thing of putting signs around people and hanging them, late war, it was happening.
Unworthy to live around his neck.
I was waiting for them to start, like, painting propaganda stuff on walls and things for the sake of the people.
Weren't really that arseworthy. They were just there to find the gold,
weren't.
So they weren't like.
I know, but if it happened,
it'd have been
accurate and nice addition if they had, you know, Sieg on a wall, they used to like that and things. And then I read a thing where there was a Volksturm. Sorry, quickly thing. There was a Volksturm guy. He wrote a diary and he said something like, "It was pointless." Like he said, we've been fighting this war for nearly six years now, and you've literally walked into the town, painted some stuff on a wall, and expected us all to like fight because you've done some graffiti. He thought it was absurd. I'm paraphrasing him massively, but it always makes. And I'm writing a thing at the moment about the Vulture, that's why I keep bringing it up. It's in my head. But it's interesting how in Germany, the end of the war is just so fascinating. Really,
yeah.
And that's why I kind of like this movie.
The film captures that end of the war gritty, you know, inevitable.
No one's safe. No one's at ease, are they?
There's a tension throughout the whole film, and I love that. But yeah, they take him up into the tower. They're about to hang him, and then Paul, you know, has this great moment where he kicks or pushes a guy out of the tower.
That's where the gore came into that sort of. That was being Glorious Bastards-y, that bit with an MP5 shooting them down. That reminded me of the cinema sequence.
Yeah. And then shouts, "I'll show you who's unworthy to live," which I love.
Yeah, it's nice. It's good writing.
It's a good scene. That's my favourite scene.
No, it's good. For me, you thought I was done talking about the Yags, but I'm not. But I liked seeing... I liked when the Sherman turned up. I was really not expecting it.
Yeah, no surprise.
I think it's Sonia... I think it's the mayor's squeeze woman, lady friend. She's driving away with the gold in the back of the Kubelwagen, or some of the gold at least, in the back of the Kubelwagen. And it's all happy, and you've got this like sort of like summery type music. It's all like you know, what's that classic song? It's like, it felt like that, you know, in the background, and it's the color palette changes a little bit and it all seems happy. And I thought that was a genuine end. So I was like, oh, okay, someone gets away. And there's this huge explosion, and the Kuwab flies off screen, like turns over, and a Sherman just pulls up out of the view, and you've got a, you know, stereotypical sort of gung-ho GI going, yeah, we got him. You know, I really like that sort of sort of cowboy-esque sort of yeah, we got him. And then they go and inspect the Kubelwagen, and there's gold. And this American sergeant gets off the Jeep, and he's like, oh, okay, you know, some gold. And you know, the private or the corporal's like, we should call it in. And the guy goes, no, I don't think we should, just keep it. I really like that. And I thought then, this is me sort of straying as final thoughts, I don't mean to, but I wish they'd then come in and caused absolute carnage in the town at the end to find more gold, to be greedy. I thought that's what they were going to. I thought they were going to get involved more. They didn't. So I was just a bit disappointed. Anyway, but interestingly, another thing I've got to mention. I got excited because I was like, "Oh, black soldiers you barely see, like black GIs in any war film, because, or not any war film. There's a few, but not many. Because." You know, you might not be aware, listener, but the American Army was segregated until, I think it was 1946, wasn't it? 1947?
Yeah.
Late 40s, at least. I can't remember off the top of my head. It was Truman that wasn't, hang on.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah, Truman desegregated the Army. So I was really interested to see it. There was a recent straight-to-streaming film called Come Out Fighting that dealt with black tankers in World War II. But the guys that, and the shoulder patch, I was like, oh, I researched that. I kind of vaguely know that shoulder patch from somewhere. And it turned out that I was getting a bit confused with another movie, but then I found out what that movie was. So the movie I'd remembered the shoulder patch from was The Miracle at St. Anna, which is a Spike Lee from 2008.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, now we're on to somewhere. So
that's not set in Germany, is it?
No, that's it, in Italy. So they served in Italy and Western Europe. And no, they only served in Italy. So I don't know what they're doing there, unless they've, you know, driven their tank straight up. You know, they did what Churchill wanted. Soft underbelly, keep going straight to Berlin, boys. Not going to stop. But no, I like it, even though it was anachronistic.
It must have been an artistic choice.
Maybe,
I think.
Yeah, maybe it was a nice choice anyway. It's nice to see them.
Interesting they made the correct division as well, because they could have easily just, you know, badged them up as anyone.
Yeah, they could have, couldn't they? And I still would. They could have just not had any badges on. It would have been fine. Yeah. No, a nice inclusion nevertheless, and it did remind me that we should do Miracle at St. Anna, because that's an interesting film. Spike Lee's done two war films, isn't he? He's done that one and the Five Bloods.
Five Bloods, yeah.
But anyway, that was a favourite scene of mine. I also liked any scene with the SS officer in, because of how cartoonishly evil he was. He got his comeuppance, got poisoned in the end.
His death scene is great. Elsa. Using his own cyanide pill.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. That whole sort of like end of war beats as well was really nice.
Yeah, but she didn't take his pistol.
No.
Another example of when you should take the pistol.
But the sinisterness of him claiming her for himself, but not doing it in it, this is good writing, but not doing it in a, like, it's difficult to explain it without being creepy, but like not in a sort of aggressively, a grabby way, you know what I mean? I'm trying to say he did it through
words.
Yeah,
there's a sinister air to the way he does it, and he sort of he lays claim to her, and he kind of just air he gives off is there's no saying no.
No, yeah, if you say no, I'll kill you or worse type thing. Yeah, it's not worse, but it's on the same level as her nearly being essayed earlier in the movie. Or being, you know, sexually assaulted earlier in the movie. It's on a par with that for the level of creepiness. Played really well. You know, Von Starnfield would, you know, he'd scare the shit out of any commando book GI or commando. In his evilness, he'd be up there.
It's classic archetypal.
Yeah, really good. It's a trope that I haven't seen for a while. So I was really like into it, and I was like, "Oh, this dude's evil as fuck. I hope he gets killed."
Mm-hmm.
Thank fuck he did. Right, that's one thing the movie does pay off, though. Characters you don't like do get demises, and I like that, because sometimes the demises aren't as tasty as you want them to be, but his was tasty.
Very true.
Very true. Final thoughts?
I liked it. I watched it a few weeks before Rob did. And on first viewing, I was like, oh, this is really good. I actually did what I never do, and I watched it with the Netflix dub.
How could you, Matthew? And you've broken an internal Fighting on Film rule. If the movie's in a certain language, you watch it in a certain language.
I know. And you know what? It wasn't a bad dub.
It was not a bad dub. Okay. Fair enough, then.
It was
there you go,
listeners.
You've got
better.
The green light from Mr. Moss there. The dub is fine. Because sometimes the dub just loses its...
It does. It loses nuance.
It loses something.
And I thought it was a really interesting story, well scripted, well acted, nicely shot, although not in the style that I expected, because I was expecting a little more of that kind of sort of like pulp grindhouse Euro war macaroni.
I was waiting for like whip transitions and like box close-ups, like Sergio Leone type stuff.
Yeah,
you know, like those West, you know, spaghetti western type stuff. Yep. A bit Wes Anderson. I was waiting for that, but it didn't happen. Which is a shame.
Yeah, I think what happened is they wanted to do a western sort of style film, but then for some reason or other, somewhere within production, it didn't really
come out that way.
Or perhaps that was just something that they decided to say afterwards because of marketing and
I think the approach evolved.
I don't know.
I think Zizou hurt that maybe a little bit. You know, Netflix wants to get its Zizou-ness out, so it edits up that trailer. I think that's for me because I'm in the same boat with you. I'm a little bit in the same boat. I'm sort of paddling. The
trailer was really good.
Behind you. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think
that's fine.
We go into it. I think the Tarantino comparisons are understandable, especially from that farmhouse scene. It's very easy for someone to just take a cursory glance at that and go, oh, yeah, it's the Inglourious Basterds farm opening.
Mm.
But it does overlook that, like, rich history of Euro war movies and
they get overlooked massively. They're very quite influential even today. There's definitely a certain breed of movie maker that still holds those movies quite dear, you know.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't overlook the influence of spaghetti westerns overall anyway.
Well,
you know.
Exactly. And like Zissou, I wouldn't call this a war film. I would say that there are more elements in it of war film.
Yeah, it's like a wartime action adventure. That's what I'd sort of go
it
for.
Is.
But it's not
an out and out war movie with a direct, you know, anti war.
Yeah, well, there's not like one army and another army, and they meet in a courtyard and have a big battle. There's not that either. You know, it's like a slice, almost like a slice of life in a way. A slice of a village.
It's like a snapshot of a weird week.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, a rough week in Sonnenberg. Sonnenberg.
I would say that my criticisms of the film are the pacing's a little bit off in places with some bits that really slow it down. But there's some really excellent set pieces. There's some really nice fights there's a little bit of a Wiccan influence.
As there is now, as you can't not have.
You often see it's increasingly the case. Good story, well acted. On my second watch, where I watched it with subtitles, I still enjoyed it.
Matt's revisioning his own work. So this is the quickest revisionist history you've ever seen, folks.
But one thing that that did stand out to me more was the times when the score doesn't work. So there's points where some of the Western themed little audio motifs don't work for me. I thought that the climactic fight in the church at the end was really well shot, really well done, nicely storyboarded, paid off all the characters in a way that was partially what you would expect, but also in, you know, some nice nuance. But there were points where the twangy guitars didn't quite work, and I don't know, there's something just I don't for some reason mentally combine Grey Palette with spaghetti western style.
Yeah, it's this whole thing. If you're gonna do score. It, lean into it way more. Because the soundtrack is there for you to lean into. So I was expecting, you know, maybe like a so they showed that bar at the start, and I was thinking, oh, okay, so it's like you got the western influence. We're gonna have a shootout in that bar.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. And we're gonna have people flung over the.
We do get a classic hanging scene, though.
Yeah, we do. We get that. Yeah. But I was expecting people to be, like, you know, thrown up the bar and smashed into bottles of schnapps, you know, all things like that. I was waiting for that to happen. It didn't happen. It just annoys me a little bit. And I'm kind of like you. As I said, I'm not in the same boat this week. I'm sort of paddling away from it because I like the script. I like the characters. I like the setting. But as I said, the pacing just threw me right off. There's a middle
section which goes into a little bit too much exposition.
Yeah, and this is maybe where I'm critical. Well, I don't really know. It's sort of like the gold for me should be is the MacGuffin. The gold's the reason. But then we go off on this huge, and it felt like half an hour because it just dragged a little bit for me, where we get this whole backstory of the gold and how it came to be and why it is, and the pastor's, you know, backstory and his morality and all that. And I was like, well, I don't need it. Here's where I should be having a big
interesting, but does kind of affect the pacing.
It kind of really stopped the movie a little bit. It might have been 10 minutes, and it's 10 minutes you could probably lose or you could save through exposition, because for me, all I needed to know at the start was von Starnfeld says, oh, that this was a Jewish family's house. It was burnt down. Yeah. We threw the Jews out, and this was that they had the gold, or they knew where the gold was. But then it turns out that's not really everything. And
you do one or the other. Later. You either do the exposition in dialogue or you show it, I think.
Twice. You could have had a nice little flash. Well, I say nice, but it's not nice to see people thrown at their home and be at home burnt down. But you could have had a flashback there and shown that for the sake of a burning a building for about, you know, where, how much that would cost. But it annoyed me a little bit. And I kind of was expecting more than a Western soundtrack and some Sergio Leone looking, you know, Django style titles cards. I was expecting more, like Zizou leading.
There were enough beats.
Yeah, and this is where it's annoying that we have Zizou to compare it to, because it's unfair to compare the two because they're not the same kind of movie. You know, I think Blood and Gold leans more into the adventure style, action adventure, where Zizou is more of a weird road movie mixed in with an actioner, mixed in with a Western parody. There's a lot going on there, or Western homage at least, and strong silent types, all that type of thing. This movie isn't really doing that because Mazza has more to say. He actually has a backstory. Yeah. It just didn't land properly for me. Like there's moments I enjoyed, but this week for quite a while, actually, the movie just didn't resonate with me. It didn't stick in my head. I had to go back and watch a few sequences a few times because I'll be honest with you, listen, I'd plainly forgotten them a few days after watching it, which is a shame because I wanted to like this film because the trailer had built me up. And I think that's reference go full circle back to the start of the episode. That trailer set me up for a film that I didn't get. And I was annoyed about that, but I'm not sure that's the fault of the director. I'm not sure that's the fault of the script writer, the cast, anything. That's a post thing for promotion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which didn't do the movie a service.
We got that straight trailer, and then we got the sort of exploitation film style trailer.
Yeah, and this movie isn't really that.
No,
it's
not.
It has beats of it, but it doesn't lean into it enough.
If they'd gone all in, it would have worked, I think. But also if they had gone for a straighter, more traditional kind of war movie, adventure movie type thing with a different type of score, some different editing choices, then I think it would have worked better that way.
Just as well. Yeah. I was just conflicted with it this week. I was like, I kind of want to like it, then I don't. And then I think, you know, the John Wick fight scene, do we need that? you know, could you
I
just
thought
lean...
that went well.
I've seen it a lot though, lately, I think.
It wasn't too Wickian for me. It was okay. It was enough. Like there was parts of it that I thought, okay, that's quite a nice representation of how they've done that. I like how they've approached that.
I think I've had enough of it lately.
It was overblown, but I've seen John Wick 4. You haven't seen John Wick 4.
Yeah, but then I was kind
John
of burnt
Wick 4
out.
Is way too
John
overblown.
John Wick 3 burnt me out a little bit of that whole.
Yeah. Well, if you watch 4, it'll
right. Well, I've been, you know, on a few people's recommendations, been holding off on watching 4 for a bit. Someone will come along and crack this Western Euro style thing that this was going for. Might lean into it heavier.
There's definitely some sort of subgenre or resurgence of a subgenre emerging with these sort of films.
Nice try, but it just didn't land for me.
The best thing for you guys to do is you've heard two opinions on it. Go and watch it and make up your own. You know,
yeah, please do. It's on Netflix. You know, one of the films which couldn't be easier to see if you have a Netflix subscription. So there we go. That was Blood and Gold. Next week will be our Patreon pick. If you are a Patreon listener, by the time you listen to this episode, the vote might have gone. If you're not, do check the Patreon or do become a Patreon and help keep the mics on here at FOF HQ. We'd love to have you. And keep it FOF for all things war movie reviews. Follow us on our socials, on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok. You find everything on our website, actually, at fightingoffilm.com. You can start from episode one. Have a FOF binge if you do. Let us know how you're enjoying the show. Give us a review and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.